Black Tom's Red Army by Nicholas Carter and read by Paul McLaughlin for Saga Egmont. Prologue. I think the new modellers need all their dough with ale, for I have never seen so many drunk in my life in such a short time. Sir Samuel Luke, Parliamentary Governor of Newport Pagnell, on seeing troops from the new model army for the first time. By the Drum and Monkey, Windsor, April 5th, 1645. The army of the saints was in town right enough.
Tie that back, you round-eyed whoremonger!
Curses which would have raised eyebrows in a cavalier cathouse, followed by a volley of ale and a soft thud of fists in flesh.
Oh, you callin' round-head!
Indignant crop-headed louts from the Tower Hamlet's auxiliaries, lured to Windsor by the promise of a portion of their back pay, dropped their mugs and piled in. Plates flew, ale spilled. Long-haired northerners, boys from the pike block by their matted locks and lank ponytails, closed ranks and tumbled them back across the hearth. A red-coated musketeer cartwheeled across the room, taking a stockade of ale-laden tables with him. His mate swung his tankard, connecting with an ale-addled corporal's jaw and propelling him into the arms of the crimson-cheeked goodwife, hurrying to save what was left of her plate. Blood and foam splattered shirt and bodice. A tooth skittered across the table, trailing a thin string of blood. William Sparrow flicked it away, tilting his head, trying to pick the Scotsman's drift over the increasingly rowdy inn.
"You'll have to speak up, Archie. Never mind, you might be listening,"
Sparrow encouraged. Windsor, melting pot for Parliament's underachieving armies. Thousands had obeyed the call and reported for duty with the new army, an army made up of the drunks and dregs from every regiment in the land, if the clientele at the Drum was anything to go by. Maybe they ought to form another damned committee, especially for all the pot wallopers who had obeyed Parliament's fevered appeals. The Scots cavalryman straightened his legs, long black boots splattered to the knee, squared toes turned toward the hearth.
"As I was saying, it's politics, laddie. If you're not worked out, it's why we've been at it hammer and tongs these last 3 years."
The boys from Essex's old army had been at it hammer and tongs and all, arguing the toss whether they should sign up with the new army or go home. Candle-wasting pricks should have saved their energy. Sparrow narrowed his eyes, trying to concentrate. He had lost a thread somewhere. They'd been talking about his appointment, or demotion. He'd petitioned Nab to appeal to the army secretariat on his behalf, hoping the Scot could persuade them toward leniency. He'd fathered a child, not sold his soul to Satan. They'd banged him down to captain. His old friend had been in the middle of telling him how he had gotten on when the fight had broken out behind them. They were all supposed to be on the same side. Major Archibald McNab, red-bearded cavalryman turned professor of political science at the University of Civil Warfare, put down his pot and slapped his hand on the table. The morose youth jumped. Well, maybe not youth, not now. The war had knocked all the youth out of William Sparrow, left a glaring, resentful great pock pudding of a Sassenach. McNab studied his old friend, the youth he'd mentored through his first formation, skirmish, battle, and campaign. He'd taken a few too many knocks to the head in the pike block, judging by his apparently wandering reason. He repeated,
"Politics, laddie. It's the same for you and I. Aye, the same for your fine princes and gentlemen. It's all politics these days."
"Tell me something new," Sparrow thought glumly.
"Oh, religion. Don't forget religion now, Archie,"
he countered, swilling the ale in his tankard. He'd brooded and rolled it long enough to drive every bubble out of his beer. McNab raised his bristling red eyebrows.
"We'll leave religion if you don't mind. I've no wish to fall out with you and all, laddie."
Sparrow studied his old comrade. He'd not changed much since they'd ridden into Bristol before the storm. Going on 3 years before. Sparrow, though, he was barely recognisable from the hulking youngster who had followed him under Redcliffe Gate on a wall-eyed piebald, mooning over his sweetheart. He wondered for a moment what had happened to the old nag. Glue by now, he guessed. The horse, not his sweetheart. Bella would be set up somewhere nice, married to some cavalier toff in all likelihood. That rat Scott Telling, for instance. He'd heard a dozen rumours from various unreliable witnesses. One turncoat dragoon he'd spoken to had sworn she'd had twins. To a captain in Rupert's lifeguard. Runty fellow with a stringy moustache. Aye, that'd be him. Twins? His first curled around the tankard, squeezing beads of moisture from the tiered leather handle. McNab let him be, casting a professional eye over the packed tavern. The fight was forgotten and they were all making up now. Redcoats, not quite all but close.